What's up, guys? Welcome to Beyond with Chris Hall. I am Chris Hall, your host, and welcome to the first episode. It's a big deal. We're here. Number one episode. I have focused so much time, hours and hours, on curating the list of interviewers here. I want to say a huge thank you to everyone who listened to the trailer and gave me such positive feedback. I'm shocked at the amount of people who are messaging me saying, "Oh, I love your podcast. I love your podcast." I was like, "We didn't even drop the first episode. That was just the trailer." So I'm here like, damn, I really got to deliver. And I am doing my darn best to do that. I've spent so much time curating the list of interviews I have going on, recording about one every week going forward. So I know it's been a little bit of time since I dropped that trailer. It's because all the planning. I redid my studio. I did with the help of B&H. I redid my studio. I've like gotten all this equipment set up. I designed my, you know, the interior here. I'm still working on the wall and stuff like that, if you're watching this on YouTube. But yeah, I put tons of effort into this. So now I'm super excited to finally deliver the first episode, which drops right now. You're watching it with Jonathan Andrews. Now, Jonathan Andrews is a great friend of mine. I met him a few years back at an innovation festival in New Jersey called Propelify. He literally just came up to our booth, Kickstarter booth, my company, and we just hit it off from there. And it's been a pleasure to see him grow and what he's up to. He was and still is a creative director, extremely influential creative director in hip hop, fashion, music, creativity, culture. He's a creative director for Migos. He was creative director for Chris Brown. He's now doing Cardi B's projects, let's say. And he's killing it. He is only 27 years old. He's a great example of if you can make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. He's making it happen. Now he's taking his talents to LA to start his own creative agency and work on personal projects like that. Go full-time entrepreneur. We go over fashion culture, hip hop culture, how to level up your fashion game personally for you. We go over the difference between designer labels, all of that. It's extremely interesting. We go over how to get your clothes on celebrities. It's truly a great entrepreneur story, and I'm so happy to share it with you. So I want to thank B&H for partnering with me on this. I've been shopping there for 10 years, and now they want to partner with me on this podcast. So I'm super thankful for that. I outfitted my whole studio with stuff from them. So all the gear is going to be linked below in the description. And I also want to thank Hint, because I drink Hint all the time. I needed Hint at my office like 24/7, and I asked them, and they wanted to partner as well. So they are now, like, there's a Hint fridge you'll see in the dope Hint fridge that you'll see in the shot. But yeah, they're hooking me up with water, and my guests can have it too. I love it. I'm obsessed with it. So I want to thank them for partnering with me too. And that's about it, guys. Let me know if you have any questions. Leave them in the comments on YouTube. I'm dropping this on YouTube, as you can see here, but I'm also obviously dropping this on Apple Podcasts as well as Spotify. It's live on Spotify right now. So however you get your podcast, however you want to consume it, I'm just putting out both to have it be where however you want to watch. But obviously the focus is on really good audio, as you can see from the mic setup and such. So I'll be focusing on getting the best people possible in here. I know quite an array of amazing people. I'm blessed to know them, and this is a way for me to bring in people who would not be able to hear these people speak about things that are kind of deep, much deeper than the average interview. That's hence the name Beyond. This the point of this is to go beyond what most people hear and what most people think, and how most people do things, and what most people actually tell you in these interviews. Because as I know from being an entrepreneur, when I'm interviewed, it's kind of the surface level questions every single time. What do you do? How did you get there? They want to know how much money I made, how many followers I have. Like, you can read this stuff off a card. So this is to defy that. So thank you so much for joining this journey with me. I hope to absolutely deliver to my fullest extent on it, and I couldn't be more excited. So without further ado, here is episode one of Beyond with Chris Hall. I'm Chris Hall. Thanks so much for being here, and here we go. Hey everybody, what's up? Chris Hall here, back with another podcast. Actually, it's the first podcast, so welcome. Johnny. Not only have I known our first guest for a few years, but honestly, he's definitely the plug in the fashion world. You could say the culture world, the hip hop world. If you think I'm involved with hip hop and culture, this is the level up for me. So I'm very happy to have him on. Jonathan Andrews, welcome.
Hey, thank you, Chris. It's my pleasure.
Of course. And I think, you know, there's a few things to talk about. Not only have you kind of already become an accomplished person in fashion, and specifically hip hop fashion merchandise, very sought after already, in my opinion. But you would say you have a lot more to go, like a much longer journey ahead of you. So I kind of just want to give everyone a sense of where you came from and how you got to be, you know, working with who you are working with now. I mean, we're talking about someone who does work directly with major hip hop artists, Migos, Chris Brown, and other ones I'm not even sure if I could say yet. So, kind of give them a little perspective from the beginning and how you ended up here.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for that intro. Actually, I'm glad to see that that Chris thinks of me so highly, because I respect him a lot, you know, and thank you for having me here for this. And, I don't really do too many interviews or anything like that, because, like I said, I don't think that the story is worth.
You're not just saying that to be cool.
Yeah, it's like I just don't think that the story, like my story yet, is cultivated into something. But to contrary belief, there are gems, I think, in the struggle versus like the success. So I'm not really here to talk to you guys about like all of like, you know, the sexy stuff that people think come along with the business and whatnot. I'm sort of here to give you like the realness and like the actual things that happen and, you know, the trials and tribulations you need to overcome in order to be successful here, right? Because there is a very, very thin line between cool and commercial. And I really, really, really love to travel that line, because, you know, hailing from, you know, I was born in a small town called Paterson, New Jersey. My mom was able to sort of migrate us about a mile outside of that area to a city called Elmwood Park, which I grew up at. And I would say, you know, I went to actually, you know, a community school first. So that's the thing, right? And we talk about education and school and stuff like that. And take it from me, I don't think, honestly, that it's something that you need in order to be successful. I do think that it's something that can be of assistance. I do think that it is a network of other like-minded individuals that you may have graduated with or you have as alumni and whatnot, and relationships, whatever it may be. But in terms of the stuff that they teach you, the reason I never really got into school is because they didn't teach you how to be an owner, an entrepreneur, or a boss, or anything like that.
So you grew up in New Jersey, right?
Yep,
and New Jersey. And you still live there now, today.
Yep.
Even though you might be moving soon, right?
Yeah.
But we can get to that. But what was the start of your professional career in fashion or whatever?
So it didn't come until a little bit later in my life. I didn't really know exactly what I wanted to do. I didn't know, you know, really. There is, when I was coming up, there was no social media. There was really, you know, there was like a little bit of MySpace, a little bit of Facebook.
And here. How old are you now for reference?
I'm 27 now. Okay. Yeah. So it's been a while. I've been in the industry since, I would say I was about 21 years old. So,
how'd you get started? What was your first job?
So, I mean, back in the day, which is crazy because I didn't think anything of it. I actually worked like directly across the street from my house. There was a store that made school uniforms for private school students. So it was called Co-Ed. And little did I know that at a super young age, I was going to be doing screen prints, embroidery, and different things, working with garments, shipping, and all these different things that like I never really thought that I was going to use in the future. I knew I loved clothing, but realistically, the only reason I got the job is because they were paying like $15 an hour for somebody that was like 16 years old.
It's so really good for the time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I had enough money to be able to go and get the pair of sneakers that I wanted that week or whatever it was. was, you know.
And what were you doing there?
I was doing embroidery. So I was setting everything up onto like clamps and like these like, I work with them so much. I don't even know what they're called to this day, but like I would pretty much like place them like, you know, when there's like behind every single thing that you see in fashion, there was somebody physically doing that. Right.
There's a lot that they don't see.
Right. Right. And those are some of the things that, can give you a little bit of a deeper insight into fashion, right? And see which part of the business do you want to be a part of, right? Like I had that experience in like the manufacturing from an early age. I knew like, you know, that's great. I know we need to manufacture stuff, but it's not what, it wasn't what was driving me at the time.
So after co-ed, what was the next step?
The next step was, like I said earlier, like I'm not the biggest school advocate, but I did go to community school. So I went to Bergen Community College for 2 years. I graduated with an associate's there in communications. At this point, I really wanted to be, you know, like Ari Gold, honestly. I wanted to be an agent, and I wanted to represent musicians, actors. Ari Gold is a fictional character based off of Ari Emanuel, one of the strongest and most powerful talent agents in the country.
So you wanted to get into like entertainment way.
Okay. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, you soon start to realize that New York isn't necessarily built for that type of situation, that, you know, the pastures that lie ahead were in Los Angeles. And at that point I hadn't, you know, I went to LA when I was like a kid, you know, to visit some of my family out there, but it wasn't really even a thought at that point. It was like, okay, so what's next? New York City is what's next.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? So what was kind of the first, notable job, you know, working with, starting to get more into the culture side, because a lot of fashion kind of goes unnoticed. There is no culture to it.
Yeah.
But then I think your edge in this is that you've really gotten to interact with the biggest artists on earth at this point. And you know, making merch for them is in a way a lot more, you could argue it's a lot more relevant than making, you know, clothes that are just in a store that like no one ever buys or knows who made it or knows what it stands for. So how did you transition from that as a more, you know, technician over to working with these types of people?
So realistically, I think that the moment that I knew that, you know, I was going to really, really be doing fashion and all these things was, you know, I had started up a clothing line called High Street. And I was naive at the time, you know, but you have to really try things and really get a feel for things to know what you want to do, especially for with the rest of your life. You know, that's a lot of time. Mm-hmm. So I started up my first brand and, you know, I wish that I could come here and tell you guys that it was like a major success and like I'm still eating from it to this day and stuff like that.
That's not how it works.
That's just not how it works. And, you know, and when you unleash your first project, it's like your baby. It's like your child. It's like everything you've been working on. It's like everything goes into it. And it's like, you know, really takes a lot from you. And it was really through me doing stuff that I liked that I was able to interact with these artists because, you know, I was designing these garments, these goods that I just really personally liked that were from Ralph Lauren Polo archives. And the only way you can get these pieces at the time was to pay, you know, like $4,000 or $5,000 for this jacket. It was called the Snow Beach.
Yeah.
And
that just came back, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. 5 years after I dropped it, it came back. So that was, you know, that was great to see.
All right. So you start your first brand, right? And you think that it's going to be like your main shit, right?
Absolutely.
Like I made it. I planned out the whole shit. Mm-hmm. It's going to be popping. I'm going to get celebrities wearing it. It's going to make me $1 million, right?
Right?
That's what you thought, right?
Of course.
that's what we all think.
Absolutely.
But it didn't exactly go that way, but it did help you propel into something else, right? So
absolutely.
How did that kind of develop? And then how are you able, most importantly though, how are you able to make something of that? Because it's so easy to kind of, it's so easy to fuck it, the whole thing up, first of all.
Yeah.
But it's also so easy to like just work for nothing and then you didn't really make anything of it and you can't take that into your next venture. Because even, you know, failures can be our lessons.
Right.
But if you don't know how to kind of propel it, it can be a waste of time. So what did you make of it and how did you do that?
I mean, so at this point, you know, we're really just pretty much biting off more than we can chew, you know, like,
it was just you?
No, I had two partners, which were great guys. Just not, they were not, in the garment business at that point, you know, they practiced law and, you know, still great guys to this day. Those are my people. DeGrada Halkovich, by the way, DeGrada Halkovich LLC, plug.
Yeah, first ones to believe in you, I guess.
Exactly.
Which is important.
And they believe.
And you never forget.
Right. Because they believed in me blindly. I was a crazy kid with a vision, and we didn't know what we were going to do. We just knew we were going to do something, you know? So, you know, long story short, not to harp on it, but, you know, yeah, you do take it like that. And when you do run into failure, or when you do see things unfolding the way that you didn't plan, it's best to take that energy and turn it into a positive. Now, everyone is going through different things in their life. I don't know how you're going to take your negative and turn it into a positive, but you need to. It is one of the most important keys and tools to everything, is to take that energy that is coming towards you and to reverse it into a better light. Speaking things into existence, whatever it may be, find your way to channel that energy, because that's really going to help you. Because the more you go along, you start to find out that there are problems. A problem is going to arise. Something is always going to happen.
It's like half the time is wrong.
Right. Exactly. And it's only
so that. If you don't know how to do that, it's crucial. It's a crucial skill.
Exactly. I would even say to add on to that, that maybe 75% of the time you're wrong. It's that 25%. Yeah. And it's such a small window, because out of four attempts that you do, three of them are going to fail.
Yeah.
And you have to continue believing in the vision and the dream, because sometimes when things fail, it's not meant for you. Mm-hmm. That's all it is. That's all the science.
So in your first venture, High Street, what's the kind of the story of that, long story short, like in terms of its success and where it took you?
I mean, it was actually great, to be honest, because we ended up doing, I would say close to like $500,000 in business in our first year.
And that's right. Wholesale plus retail plus online?
Yep, wholesale plus online. We were selling to over 50 stores across the country. I had accounts in Japan, Dubai.
Which is a huge accomplishment in itself, just having those relationships.
For a kid straight out of college, I mean, at this point I had graduated. I went to Pace for my bachelor's. Straight out of college, and rebounding, honestly, off of a failure. This is one of the many failures, that I've had, right? But I was off of another failure. And then through this failure, I found out that I'm capable of generating hundreds of thousands of dollars in not only sales, but design, whatever it may be. Yeah. We found a formula that was, you know, not perfect, but it worked.
And in the beginning, what would you say were your main skills, like top three things that you brought to the table? Was it design? Was it creative direction or business skills or what?
It's kind of always been creative direction. That's sort of been what I do, is like I have the exact idea of how I want something. I mean, down to the T, down to the buttons, down to the type of stitch, down to the thread count, down to the fabrication, down to the silhouette, pretty much everything I want to cover. But when I was studying in school, I didn't take a interest into the technical side of, you know, programs like Photoshop and Illustrator, which was a mistake, by the way. definitely should have taken on those, knowing that they were going to be an intricate part of the process, because I knew I couldn't draw from the beginning. I was never really that type of artist, that type of kid that would doodle or draw. Like the only thing I knew how to do was like that S, you know, like the S that
you get. You know exactly what you're talking about.
That was the only thing I knew how to do. So I was like, I don't think that art is really going to be my thing. But we end up working with a few super talented designers that will remain nameless, that are very successful. And we're able to take the crazy thoughts that were in my head and put them down, and make them tangible.
Gotcha.
That pretty much right there, through those pieces. I mean, the collection was about like 10 pieces, the first one at least, right? Mm-hmm. The business didn't fail right away. It failed after about 2 years.
And what caused that? One bad collection?
Mismanagement, I think. Okay. I think that sometimes when you're very adamant about a piece or a product, it may not be, it has to be the perfect storm for many reasons in the fashion industry, you know, the timing, the people that are involved in it, everything, you know. So we're sort of on a limb here and sort of relying less on the direct to consumer business, which is what I should have been more focused on, because
it does make more money.
It makes more money. And who's on a
per piece basis, I should say.
Yeah. And the person that's the most correct is always the consumer.
Yeah.
You know, in the middle, in the middleman phase here with, you know, and I love working with stores as well, but the stores I was working with at that time didn't even fully grasp or understand some of the things I was dishing to them and trying to pitch to them. You know,
it's kind of like you when you're pitching a store, you kind of need them to believe in that new trend. If it's not just a run of the mill.
Sure.
You know.
Sure. Especially if the guy's like 60 years old that's buying it, and like his demographic is like 18 to 24. It's like, oh, hold on. How is this, you know, 50 year old man or woman going to be able to provide the style that the kids want?
Yeah.
And that was something that always rubbed me the wrong way, because
it's kind of like versus, it's like what you want to do versus what you know will sell.
Right.
And it's always trying to bring those together, right? Because you don't want to go on the trend of whatever, we're going to make a tracksuit,
right,
but you end up making a tracksuit because I got to stay in business.
Right.
And sometimes that's a really hard decision to make, right?
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of the hardest decisions. So I found a way to, you know, and it's always being developed. I'm always still working. I'm always still fine tuning it. I'm trying to find ways to take what's commercial and make it cool, you know,
right,
and take what's cool and not necessarily make it commercial, but build it into something that can be around for a super long time. You know, the goal isn't to be, you know, trendy or to be the biggest thing out, because usually it's very short lived.
And you don't want your creation to be in the trash in a year.
Right. I'd like something to last, you know, for the rest of my life. So, you know, and that comes with like the experience that comes with, you know, going through these failures and understanding everything that, you know, it's best that if you're going to invest the time, regardless, you want something that's going to yield the best return. You know, if you're a farmer, you're not just going to plant half of a farm and leave the rest of it to wither away. You're going to try to yield the most crop from all the space that you have.
Yeah.
Right. Or all of your capabilities, you know? So
in the end, you said it didn't work out, but
it didn't work out.
What were you able to take from that, and how did you propel it into your next venture?
So it didn't work out, but at this point, Chris Brown and I are starting to build a relationship based off of the garments. Very, very humble. Nice, like the way that he's portrayed versus like how he acts night and day. It was a pleasure.
How'd that relationship start? Did you just send him something randomly, or you just met up?
I actually worked with his stylist at first.
Okay. Yeah, so his stylist was his or her job was to style Chris, and that person looked and said, oh, I like what Johnny's making.
Yeah. For the most part, that's how it goes down. And I blindly at this point send clothes to the stylist, and you know, and that's another thing too. It's like,
talk about that a little bit, because most people have absolutely no idea on how celebrities end up getting clothes. Cause like, of course, you know, they can go into the Versace, sorry for the siren, but we'll keep it in.
So we're in New York City, just so you know, and these are the types of things that happen out here. So if you're not ready for that, don't move to New York.
Not ready for the podcast either. Of course, you know, like celebrities can just go into the Versace store, the Gucci store, but beyond that, they do end up wearing independent brands that no one really knows about until they wear it. So how does that get in their hands in the first place?
Sure. I mean, product placement really can happen in a number of ways. My usual theory on product placement is, if you have a connection or relationship one person out, then you can give the clothing. Then you can, you know, have some trust, you know. And sometimes it's not always a stylist, because some of these people, although they have stylists, they're also a human being and they have their own style that they reflect, right? So then there's two different types of stylists, right? You have the stylist that's going to come in, remake your entire wardrobe and change who you were to who you are, because that's what they want.
And they're creating that brand at the same time.
Sure, right. Then there's a stylist that is, and to me, this is the best stylist, is the one that knows their clients so well that he or she shops for them, brings them all the stuff that they thought they would wear, and then they pull from that. You know, like you really have to know someone in order to be able to pick out a full rack full of garment.
Mm-hmm. So once Chris Brown Stylist had your stuff, how'd that go? Did he start wearing it on his own or?
No, actually it was, maybe a month it took for it to happen. And, sweating bullets at that point, you know, like, I'm like, man, my first,
you're thinking to yourself, like, this might be my first big break with,
right. Absolutely.
Because it makes a big difference if celebrities wear clothes. Like, I mean, this, not only for the direct sales, but you can show that to Zoomies or whoever and like, hey, look who's wearing my clothes. And it makes a big difference. Right.
Absolutely. And I mean, this difference right here actually, shifted. It was one of, my defining moments, this shift right here, because this shift allowing me to, work with somebody of the stature as Chris is great, you know, a kid from New Jersey, and people don't even know that actually Chris used to live in New Jersey for a short period of time. So things may seem odd at first, but like everything has a plan. Everything is going to go in the way that it's supposed to go. So long story short, he wears the product. It does great. I mean, I blow out of the product at this point. I don't even have enough to fulfill the demand. Which is a whole another topic that we can get into
another
time.
In terms of online sales or wholesale?
Yeah, online sales.
Okay.
So ironically, at first, all of those buyers we were just talking about declined the piece at first.
Even with celebrity placement?
No, well, I didn't have the celebrity placement.
Oh, okay.
That's the sweet part about it. Exactly. Yeah. So that's like, that goes to show you the impact that it can make. It's not everything, because sometimes it's not, the buyer just may not understand it, you know, even with product placement. But I will say that after that product placement, let's say a lot of stores started calling me up looking for those pieces and they just weren't available anymore at that point. I made it a thing to not make them available because I wanted the buyer to feel like they had lost out on something, to believe me and to trust in my vision and my brand the next time that when I do a drop, I'm going to pick this up because I know that this is going to work.
Maybe they'll pick up 4 or 5 pieces from the line, not just that one shirt that you wore or whatever.
And it's still was the hard piece doing that.
What was the piece that he wore that was biggest?
He wore just about everything.
Okay.
But the biggest pieces were the Snow Beach, which Chris will pop up right here. The 3M neoprene bomber jacket, which Chris will put up right here.
Or right here. There's a little more room.
Yeah, more room over here on top of the Hint Water. And I mean, a lot of the stuff, but those were the two pieces that were actually different enough and, you know, were craved and wanted enough by the market that it made a difference in my business, you know?
So obviously there's a lot more to the story and new people who you're working with now. But one thing I did want to cover is now that's a case of a celebrity, Chris Brown, in that case, is wearing a piece because of you. You made it and got it to him, right? Can you talk a little bit about the fashion cycle and how things go from a designer to a celebrity to the average consumer? And then, you know, in the end, someone can walk into Walmart and get it at $5. And, you know, maybe it starts on the runway and ends up at Walmart. Like, what is that whole cycle? Because I think that's one of the, I think that's so fascinating. And people really don't realize that, you know, what you can go in today and get at Target was worn by celebrities maybe 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 years ago.
Right.
And like when you can start to see things in the street and identify it, I think it completes the whole picture. So how does that work and where do you see your role in it? And kind of how have you seen that evolve and come to kind of the forefront here?
So, that's like the business, the nitty gritty business of this, right? Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, the sexy, you know, fashion runways, Paris, this, that, Milan. It's not really that. You know, this is actually some of the wealthiest people that I know in this business sell to Walmart. They sell to Target.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's a very, very, very big market. Not something personally I'd like to get into myself right now, but I can see the cycle is it's in theory, it's quite simple. When you get into the specifics of everything, it becomes quite difficult because we're talking about pieces that were engineered at X price point when they first released.
Thousands of dollars on the runway from a designer in Italy.
Which now, 2 years later, H&M
was offer for like $5, right?
Right. Yeah. Exactly. You know, so
that's a crazy part too. That like, there's this whole. Let's say the spectrum is from, you know, a designer runway show in Paris Fashion Week, and the bottom is like Old Navy or H&M or Zara or something like that. It's like the people on the bottom are trying to grab the top as fast as possible and bring it down.
Yeah. Yeah.
But in the middle, there are people like, you know, you with your own independent brands and like, I mean, tens of thousands of different brands. So
it's crazy because that right there is the biggest battle. I think that once you get into like a certain level or a certain point of being in this business, you start to think about what you stand for and who you are, right? Are you the guy that creates the everyday wearable pieces for like the modern man, or are you the guy that sells a whole lot of it and you have no idea who wears the clothing? Mm-hmm. With me, I want to really know my consumer. I want to know exactly who it is, because if I know who it is, if I can identify the consumer, I can create better stuff mm-hmm. for them. I can create things that will intertwine and be more functional with their lives. I can create things that they'll go back to their friends and say, hey, I love this brand because of X, Y, and Z. When you're buying something for a trend, if you're buying something for the look of it, price point, whatever it is, all of those things go out the window and mm-hmm. it becomes about what is the cheapest price I can get this for and where can I get it? You know,
how do you deal with kind of the difference between you need to make clothes that a celebrity wants to wear, aka this person has basically an unlimited budget. And they can wear whatever they want, and they might be wearing, you know, $1,000 sweatpants, but you need to make something that they want and their consumer wants, who's going to buy it for maybe $25, $30. Well, how do you deal with that balance right there?
It's still a balance that I'm trying to figure out.
Honestly. Yeah, it's hard, right?
It's super difficult.
I guess it's the endless battle right there.
Yeah. It's almost like a contradiction, right? Because, not fans, but people that support the artist want to dress exactly like them. But because of the cycle of fashion, how long things take to produce, to get made and stuff like that, once it becomes available to them, it's, I would say not out of trend, but it's just not something that the people are already onto the next at that point.
Yeah, it loses the allure that it had.
Absolutely. And now it's happening so much faster. And now they're
looking for the celebrities looking for the next thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Because that's the natural evolution or progression, right? Is like, you know, once you do this, you want to do that. Mm-hmm. And once you do that, you want to do even more. So I think that because of those social media, that cycle, which was once like, it actually took a long time ago. It took a long time to go from runway to knockoff.
Yeah.
You know, it took a while because the people weren't as sure that there was a demand for this, right? Things have changed. People are able to express themselves through fashion now and be able to, you know, show who they are without having to say a thing. So mm-hmm. that means that a kid that may have had late access in Atlanta or in Houston, those are now the kids that are at the top of the game, because through that lack of, mm-hmm. they were able to find a way to inform themselves and be at the top of that, mm-hmm. you know, and you can see that happening within music. You can see it happening within the fashion. There's a lot of things where the social realm has now shown us that, hey, there's more fashion than just out of New York. There's more than out of just LA, you know, like we can go to Paris, you know, like, and that's not frowned upon now. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like a kid's doing streetwear, doing runway shows, you know,
can you explain literally how things get from the runway at Fashion Week in Paris to H&M?
I mean, simple. A designer that works at H&M sees the stuff on the runway.
There might be some people there.
I can't elaborate on that. I'm not sure how the companies do it, but I do know that they see it the same way that we see it. And if, you know, they think that it's something that's going to work, they're going to go ahead and put that into production. So, you know, the key thing is that a lot of those companies, the big ones, are vertically integrated, right? So being vertically integrated gives you a major advantage.
What does that mean?
Being vertically integrated means that everything from the sourcing of the fabrics to the production to the sales of it are all under control of you. So somebody that's vertically mm-hmm. integrated right now, or is at least getting to a vertically integrated point, I would say would be like somebody like Ronnie Feig. You know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. he controls the entire process.
Who owns Kith, if yeah. you don't know.
So he controls the entire process, you know, mm-hmm. even from the distribution of it, which is something that not, you know, many people do. A lot of people yeah. sell their
so
brand.
So whatever the creative vision is, it basically can get done a lot quicker.
Absolutely. And they can put it to market a lot faster. If they yeah. didn't have their own stores, they would have to be on a buying calendar, which would then cause them to be in the store 3 months later, because that's when the buyer said, hey, I want to bring that in. So that's why I think that, you know, unfortunately, mm-hmm. aside from those big stores, to be able to survive in the brick and mortar business, you have to be vertically integrated now, because you cannot yeah. wait on other people to give you what you need for your business when you need it.
And in terms of like the in terms of the biggest brands on earth, you know, H&M, Old Navy, Zara, they're getting things from the runway to the literally the store in what, yeah. a week?
Yeah. I mean, or sometimes like, you know, 2-3 weeks for sure.
Yeah.
And you never know, because like, you know, as much as we despise some of them, like the people that do that, because it, in some form or another, it is a pollution, you know, it is,
right.
You know, there's the ethics behind it are a little bit questionable.
Does that affect someone like you though, who has that, a brand that's in the middle, that's not the cheapest thing, not the most expensive thing? Does it affect you? Cause even like with me, I'm just out of the market for H&M and Old Navy. I just don't want to give my business to them. Mm-hmm. So that them stealing your idea or Louis Vuitton's idea or Prada's idea doesn't affect me, but do you think it affects people on the whole?
Does
it affect your business on the whole?
I wish I could blame it on that, but realistically, no. When there's a customer yeah. that wants the type of stuff, they know the same way that you think you don't want to shop there. They know that they don't want yeah. that stuff either. It's a natural evolution. It's a progression, right? And as kids become more and more interested in fashion and the things that revolve around it, you know, it's uh-huh. become a parallel lane to like, you know, oh, I want to go be in the NBA. Oh, I want to be an artist. I want to be an actor. I want to be in Hollywood. Oh, mm-hmm. I want to be a designer now. You
yeah.
know, so when you have that growing, kids aren't going to as easily be able to be sold the BS that these big companies are pushing.
Absolutely. And I totally see the cultural shift, the buying shift, the economic shift from the biggest brands, the H&Ms, to brands like yours, or which you got to talk about, by the way, but brands that aren't just these huge multinational corporations, like something that's unique. It's from New York. It's from LA, like different celebrities wearing it, you know, yeah. like I think it's much, it's more unique. It has a story behind it. And I think people across the board are starting to pay attention to that. Like, oh, maybe I shouldn't buy this like $5 shirt from H&M. Maybe I could like spend $20 and like have it be nicer, last longer.
Right.
Support like a more independent company.
And then that kid tomorrow either ends up going next year and buying now a $40 t-shirt, maybe yeah. starts really evolutionizing. Or that kid may say, you know what? For all the $20 t-shirts that are out there, man, I don't like any of them. You yeah. know what? I want to create my own, because yeah. I feel that there's a void.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I stepped in, is where, you know, I felt that there was a void. I felt that the pieces from back in the day weren't being shown enough love 5 years ago, mm-hmm. you know, that they were so unattainable, you know, that in a weird way, I became the H&M for the kids, right? But yeah. that was like, that's
cause
different.
Because you're pulling from maybe the $1,000 piece, trying to bring it down to $100.
Yeah.
Instead of...
But from something, though, that hasn't been available, even if they wanted to. For right. Like, you know, that's the thing. It's like, if you're going to pull something, pull it from the archive. Don't pull and stop stealing stuff that's just being shown on the runway. Show,
like,
if you're
going to
be inspired,
yeah.
there's nothing, we all know that there's nothing new under the sun here. There's nothing new that you can do in fashion, because no matter what you do, you can go and see that exact thing or a reiteration of it online or
yeah.
somewhere in an archive somewhere.
And the same exact piece can exist in the $10,000 form, in the $1,000 form, in a $100 form, in right. a $10 form.
There's different markets for everyone, yeah. you know? So somebody that's buying that H&M piece of that bootleg isn't even a worry, because they're not, they're probably the person that could buy that jacket is buying the real version, and the person that could buy that version is buying that version. Now there's like a bunch of people that are left in the middle that are saying, well, I can't afford that, but I don't want to wear H&M. What are the alternatives?
Right.
Right. And here's where a brand, you know, like mine, I hope would be able to step in and say, you know what? He's giving me the styles, the colors, the silhouettes, and everything that I'm craving for, but for a better price. You know, why don't I give this brand a shot?
And I'm trying to think of how can brands like that get out more, because you're kind of in the most difficult spot where you're not the store that's on the corner of every intersection, but then you're also not Louis Vuitton. So how do you try to get yourself out there? Is it through celebrity endorsements as much as possible?
I'd say it's one of them, not the only thing. Okay. I think that still working with key accounts and major cities is still important. I think that there are stores that are still providing an experience out of their boutiques and their retail places, which will, you know, they'll continue to have a presence here, because aside from buying online, which I'm a big fan of, you want to go to a store now, not because you're looking to touch or feel the piece. You already know what that t-shirt feels like. You know what those jeans feel like, especially if you buy from them. Now you're going there because now you see the brand and you're like, wow, this brand has a story that I can align my story with, and I want to be a part of the culture. It was like wearing the polo horse. Yeah, exactly. Like, to me, wearing the polo horse meant that I was in a clique or a crew of people that had the same, you know, vision or the same ideas at that point, you know? And to this day, I still feel like it's like that, right? Something that I could have said that for a while back was like sneakers was like that as well for a while. Now, after it reaches a certain point of commercialability, you don't go back to that same source for that inspiration. Because it's just not, you can't connect with that many people, you know, like there's so many people in the world that, like, you know, you don't need everyone to be successful.
And there's a market for everything, like at any every price. And speaking of that kind of range in price and everything, what do you think about, you know, fast fashion and buying a lot of pieces that are cheaper and you get to ride the trend every week if you wanted, versus buying, you know, 20 pieces a year instead of 20 pieces every time you go to the store. What do you think about that? And kind of, is it worth buying more expensive pieces? And it, like, what's your advice to people who are right now stuck in the, maybe they're stuck in the H&M, Zara, Old Navy, maybe sometimes they go to J. Crew if they want to get something fancy. But someone who wants to graduate to kind of be more selective about their pieces, where they're from, who they're supporting, and get into the kind of a little upper echelon of fashion. What's your advice for that? And is it worth it for them?
I think honestly, it's going to come down to your own personal style at first, right? And then there is a certain influence of the people around you as well. You know, if you put yourself around the people that all are, you know, don't really care as much about it, are going to go and find, you know, use the easy way to go get this. Oh, it's inexpensive. It's fine. I wear it. And it's disposable like fed fashion.
Yeah.
It's like disposable to me. You know what I mean? So it was like, there was like a moment where I'm like, ah, this is all disposable. You know, let me do something good with, you know, cause you know, you gather a lot of clothing and, you know, pieces throughout your day. And, you know, you start to notice like in your own wardrobe, and I'm guilty of it too, is that, I had a couple of pieces in there that shouldn't have probably been in there, that I made decisions off of impulse and wasn't really thinking. But now when I buy pieces, right. And it takes time to get like this. It doesn't happen right away. Like
that, you develop the taste for it.
Yeah. You have
and
to
knowing
develop
where to go.
It. Exactly. And knowing what it is that you like, you know what I mean? Yeah. Where it was originated. You know what I mean? So like,
what do you think is the main difference between like a t-shirt that's $10 versus a t-shirt that's $100? Cause I know a lot of people will say, oh, I would never wear that, or that's way too expensive. Like what is the difference when you move up a level?
I mean, I'll be honest. I could sit here and tell you that it's the fabric. Cause it definitely is. Oh, it's a thread. It definitely is. Everything about it is better. Where that fabric was even sourced might be better than where it's coming from. How it was sourced, you know, all of those things play a big part in it, which raise up that cost, you know. And now if you're on the side of, hey, well, you know, I'm an ethical person, and the people that are making my clothes, I also want them to be in good hands, in a good situation. That's going to drive up the cost as well.
Yeah.
You know, so that's a conscious decision that you're making. So I mean, It's tough.
I usually just tell people, go and feel it. Like, you'll know. Yeah. Like, for me,
there's not, like, it's still a t-shirt, right? But, like, I'll be honest with you. And, the real thing is, like, the real difference is the cut of it, the fit of it, how it drapes on you. Like, all of these things to somebody that isn't trained or, doesn't really care about it, isn't going to notice these things. But once you start noticing yourself and how it makes you look, and the most important, how it makes you feel, that's what it's about.
Yeah.
Clothing isn't about, we're not, like, people don't design to, like, I know, like, they say, oh, well, we're going to save the world with fashion. It's like, no, like, that's not how we save the world. Fashion might even be destroying the world, but
ecologically speaking,
true. Probably the second worst.
Not all fashion, though.
Right.
Not like your brand. It's the brands you would suspect.
Right.
Who are putting out $5 shirts.
So with that, you know, it's sort of, a decision, you know, you just end up making a decision. You're just like, you know, I like the way that these things fit on me better. I like the ethos and, like, the awareness of this company. Mm-hmm. I want to support this company because you feel like you're a part of that culture. Like, when you're a part of the, whatever, the H&M culture, it's like, you can't resonate with it because there's so many different people. There's
literally thousands of people wearing the same thing. Yeah.
So it's like, how can you relate to someone? How can you, like, how can you create a bond or some sort of just connection off of without seeing each other or speaking to each other, right?
And through fashion, I think. Almost like the thing that you said on fit is so important, because that really is a big difference. And think of, like, the ultimate luxury of having a $10,000 dress that's custom made for you, or $10,000 suit. It's the fit. It's made for you. That's the luxurious part. Like, with, if you go to a big box store or H&M or whatever, it's the same shirt. It's supposed to fit a million different people, literally, like, millions of different people.
Right. But they don't, like, a lot of people don't tell you, it's like, when you buy some ready to wear from the store there, and you buy directly from the store, you're able to alter it at the store right then and there. You can say, this is the piece I'm buying today. It's not fitting me here. And they'll have it altered for you, so it will fit you like a glove.
Speaking of which, one other thing I want to talk about is, like, of course, like, you know how, like, Louis Vuitton and Gucci found its way into streetwear? Like, people would wear Jordans with, like, a Louis belt, like, a few years ago. Most people think when they see those names, Louis Vuitton, Gucci, Versace, Prada, Fendi, all those, they kind of group into one, because a lot of them actually are literally the same company.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're so different. And the thing that most people don't know is the price points are very, very different. Like, we're talking, it could be $1,000 versus $10,000. So why is that? And why do you go to one of these luxury brands and a bag is $1,000 versus a bag is $10,000? Is it just the brand? Or,
I mean, I honestly would think that, like, it's like some of, like, the heritage within the brand. Like, some of these brands, like, and don't quote me on this, might have been around for, like, 100 years or 150 years. But some of the bigger high fashion houses that we may talk of today have only been around for, like, 40 years. So realistically, they didn't invent this.
Yeah.
They just sort of monopolized, and now they're sitting in that seat. And these are some of the brands that I love the most. You know, I love some of the brands that are available here. You know, at a somewhat of a reasonable price, you know, but that's like, you know, I think that the difference is, like, psychological, because each house, each designer have their own, you know, signature, their own trait, their own, you know, their own feel that you're going to be able to extract through them. You know, it really comes down to what fits your life, because if we did break down, like, the high fashion brands, there is actually something that fits each of these demos, right?
Yeah.
So, like,
and it is different. Like, Burberry has, like, their English style, and, like, is different.
Yeah.
It is different. But before we wrap up, I want to talk about how you got into YRN. I started working with them, which is Migos clothing line, and how that's transitioning into your own stuff. Because now, after basically, you know, you became, I would say, you're, to me at least, you're well known for doing clothing of hip hop artists on a very high level. One of the highest, definitely the highest level person I know personally. But then also, you're trying to transition out of that and do more of your own stuff, maybe a little bit of for hire work, but you're really looking to take on bigger projects. So how did you get it? How did you start working with YRN, and then how did you transition out of that, and what are you working on now?
Yeah, so the transition actually, Wyron didn't come until like the past, like maybe it was like a year and a half ago.
Yeah, so we're skipping like years. four or five years from.
So like the breakdown and like, you know, we'll, I'm sure we'll like end up doing another, you know, thing where we get into like deeper things and like stuff like that. But pretty much after working with Breezy, I was offered a position as the creative director at his company, Black Pyramid. So I took on that position for about 2 years. And we, in our first year, I think we did about like $10 million in business. Not, don't quote me on that either, but it was a high figure right around there. Yeah. You know, it might've been 9 or 11, what, 12, 13, whatever it was big. It was big. It was huge. And obviously Chris Brown is a huge artist, so you expect that, right? But big artists, sometimes their clothing lines flop. You know,
don't necessarily sell.
It doesn't necessarily sell. So it takes something. It takes a team of people to make this vision come to life, you know. And like I said before, it was a pleasure to work with Chris because he knew what he wanted. Right. And we already shared a vision of what he wanted because I was designing what he wanted before I even met him. So when the position became available, I took it on. So 2 years later, become commercial things. You start to grow from things because they may not align with the vision that you may have, or the vision that you want to have for yourself. So I had left the company, and shortly after leaving it, or like, I think it was like maybe like even in between, I was offered actually like 4 or 5 other positions working with a bunch of different artists. I can't really name them because, you know, whatever, we'll talk about that later. But yeah, the one that I chose was YRN. And this is...
But the point is, all other people were looking for this type of skill set, creative direction.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Because Black Pyramid was such a wild success, you know, there were other artists that were in need, you know, so... the one that I chose was YRN. I knew there was foresight there because This Is Culture hadn't even dropped at this point, right?
Culture album.
Yeah. But I knew that these kids were stars.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when,
so it's great, but like to paint the picture, we're not talking about Migos today.
Right.
This was Migos like 3 years ago. Like, they were still well known, but not right. The number one artist in the world.
definitely not.
You know, definitely. did you know, but you said you felt it.
Yeah, I felt it because they were going through the same trials and tribulations that I was going through. They had a success.
Them personally.
Yeah. They had a success. They were at the top and then they fell right back down all the way to the bottom. Right. And then it was because of them falling all the way to the bottom that they were able to climb up all the way back up. In the manner and the fashion that they did and the way that they took over was predetermined. They knew that they were going to do that because that energy that you get off of a failure, off of, you know, whatever it may be, if you can change,
it recalibrates you.
Right. Because if you can switch that from fear to a positive energy, mm-hmm. you're going to be able to take on anything that you desire. And I promise that.
Yeah. So you're not working with them anymore, right?
No, actually. So,
but you had a very successful run there, I would say.
Yeah, we actually did. We actually did 10 M's again. So pretty much like over, you know, and I'm like, I'm a very humble person, right? But like now I got to talk my shit, right? Like I come out and I do a job and I do it really well. I want to be treated with that same respect in return. Right. You know what I mean? So if I know that I'm going to come into your business and I know that I'm going to be able to give it my all and really work my hardest, right? And that's not me saying I'm the greatest, this, that, and the third. It's never that. It's about me putting in the work, the time, the resources, and the people around me. If I'm going to focus all that attention to your brand or another project versus myself, then I want that in return.
Yeah.
So now, instead of me, you know, actively seeking other deals to continue.
And what also business. People probably don't know is that even YRN, which is Migos clothing line, official merch, number one artist in the world at the time you were working with them, literally number one song on earth, Bad and Bougie.
Yeah.
During that said, though, It was a few other people, but the whole company was only a few people. Yeah. And so there's a lot on your plate. People might think like, oh, Migos clothing line, they definitely got 100 people in the office.
Right.
Well, what is it really like though?
Oh man. I mean, it was a skeleton crew. It was a very, very tight crew because, you know, unfortunately the brand was not performing well and where it was previously. So I made like an active decision to, you know, sort of remove it from the stores that I was in. So,
but like when you wanted to get something done, it was you on the phone with China.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, anything from that to like the sales of it. And so, you know, the concept was easy. Pull the brand from the stores that were dying and put the brand into stores that were thriving.
So reposition it.
Exactly. A reposition and a redesign. Now, a redesign doesn't mean I was going to come in and make this thing a high fashion, the next Versace. I wasn't trying to do that. I wasn't trying to let it live in its past. I wanted to create something that when we see it 10 years from now, when we see that merch the same way that we collect the merch from the artist's end, I want that to turn into good vintage, you know? Yeah. So there was never really like a central theme of the exact same stuff. I wanted to make so many different types of pieces that they can live in any era and something from the collection would still be
dope. 10 years, it'll be at a store like Round 2. It'll be like, oh, damn, I remember when Bad and Boozy was out. Like, right. And people buy it.
Ironically
enough. And that's a beautiful thing for your art to live on like that.
I had a sample, actually, of a non-authorized champion collaboration, actually, that was really cool. We did like the culture with the Champion C, and it never sold or anything like that. It was just like a personal thing. Like, I just wanted to do it. It was really cool. Uh-huh. And I dropped it off at Round 2. So I'm not sure where it is now, who has it, but somebody's got somebody's gonna have an iconic piece in a couple of years for sure.
All right, so that's kind of the story with YRN. And now, where are you at right now, today, this week, working on and so, plans?
I mean, at this point in my career, you know, obviously I hadn't had a line in a while because for the past, you know, close to 4 or 5 years, I've been working with other people on their lines, helping, you know, bring their vision to life. And I can never take anything away. It's like their vision. I want to, you know, bring it to life. But now it's time for me to bring my own vision to life, you know, and to show people in this day and age that, you know, Problem Child, which was the company that I, you know, conduct all my business under, whether it was this deal, the YRN one. I mean, even, you know, one I did, I also was fortunate enough to do Cardi B's merch as well, all underneath this company.
Which is recommended personally by Offset, I would assume.
Yeah.
Because they're absolutely engaged now.
Absolutely. They're a thing for sure. And, you know,
and Offset, that's the type of thing that really lives on. Like when you penetrate so deep with the clothes that the artist himself, like, I want to keep that guy around, like no matter what he's doing.
Yeah.
That's where you are.
I'm thankful for that. Honestly, because
it could have been very different.
Right,
I'm sure a lot of people aren't so lucky. They just get washed out, right?
People grow apart instead of growing together. And I'm not going to sit here and say like I'm like, you know, best friends with Amigos or anything like that. Like I'm not best friends with anybody that I work with or for like that. You know what I mean? In that capacity,
but you have that working relationship with them.
Absolutely,
they see the value in you. You see it.
If I want to be their friend, that's a healthy relationship. Their friend, exactly. If you want to work with them, it's a different level of respect. So to my thing for young entrepreneurs out there that are looking to work with artists and look with these people is like, you're not there to be friends. Please do not create or try to be their best friends because it's not going to work out that way. You need to create a business relationship with them so they understand when to respect you, when you can push your ideas a little bit more and not get stepped on because of that friendship. And things can change like that. You know, you can end up growing a great friendship through a solid business relationship.
Absolutely.
You're not going to have it the other way around.
A much stronger one, I think, actually.
Right. Exactly. Sort of like us.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So what, so you talked about, you know, how your vision for Problem Child, your agency, your business. Obviously you're leaving, you know, potentially successful other ventures. You know, you could probably get another gig with the artist work doing clothes, pretty easily, but why do you want to leave that? And what's your vision for yourself? And also with your moving to LA. So talk a little bit about why.
Yeah.
As well.
Yeah. So, I've come to like a transition phase, and it didn't start off like this right away. Right. Because I did put in my hours. I did put in my time, my internships. I really worked for nothing for a very, very, very long time that eventually that ended up turning into something, you know? So like with this company now that I have this knowledge, like I know that now I can stop working for the artist and start working with the artist. And that's directly. The goal. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, before I didn't have all of the keys, I would say, you know, there's so many different keys that you need in the fashion industry, right? I didn't have all of them. There were still a couple key ones missing, you know, no pun intended. So yeah. After getting those keys, some of the most important keys, I can confidently go to an artist and confidently tell them that I can turn their business, their merch business, which currently may not be producing as much as it could be, I can turn that.
Maybe they don't even like it.
Exactly. I can change that into something that they will guaranteed like, something that their fans will like, and something that stores are going to buy, that consumers right. are going to buy. You know what I mean? I want to streamline that process.
So they don't need to go to the website. They can go to Urban Outfitters and see it right there.
Exactly. They can go to Zoomies and see it there.
It's a whole different experience.
They can go to Wish in Atlanta and see it there. You know, we can do a pop-up at one of these stores, you know what I mean? And really take the culture that these artists are providing so much to and engrave them that much longer. Because unfortunately, the clothing sometimes may last longer than the song does. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? Sometimes clothing can be worn for 10, 15 years and everyone will still love it. Sometimes a song expires after 1 year. So how do we take
look at the vintage band, the vintage like rock shirts.
Exactly. Exactly.
I mean, 30 years ago.
Right.
They were on tour.
Exactly. And, you know, that's showing, you know, an era, some sort of nostalgia, you know, mm-hmm. and I think that eventually in the future, our nostalgia is going to be a little bit different. And right now, the people that we're working with are actually going to be the greats that, you know, we look up to then. Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be a bunch of new kids, you know,
yeah.
maybe doing something new and different and innovating the way that we do this. But for right now, there is a huge opportunity to be able to connect the artist with the store and with their fans in the right way, not mm-hmm. through some big Fortune 500 company taking over it and making it something that it's not. No, we don't want to do that. We want to keep it directly within the artist's vision and make the best possible merch or cut and sew that we can make uh-huh. with the best possible talent, the best possible graphic designers, the best possible manufacturers, the best stores, whatever it may be. We want to do the best of it all, because when you look to the artist and you see what they do, they're doing the best of everything,
yeah.
right? So if we want them to get behind something, we have to give them something that they can be happy to be behind, not yeah. something that they're going to want to brush under the rug. You know what I mean? So it's hard to find that, because in order to do all that, it takes money. You know what I mean? And most of the people that were doing it for the past, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years, one thing that they had was money. So that's all that mattered at one point was the money. Now, it's not so much about the money. The yeah. money's going to come if you do the right thing.
It's about the talent and the taste.
Exactly.
Bringing that taste to it.
Because that's what the kids are going to end up wanting.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
you might get a little hit off of, you know, a little, you know, something that was bootlegged or contrived, you know,
right.
in the wrong way. But with this, but again, it's organic.
In the end, you want someone to be in 2023 and be like, damn, that Bad and Bougie merch was fire.
Right.
and then you're gonna right. see some kid in the street. You're like 35 right. years old. Damn, I actually made that. I remember
right.
making that.
Right.
You're like, damn.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And you know, big shout out to the team that I've had that's worked with me along to this way. Some people still with me, others have gone on to do some pretty great things, actually. So I'm thankful for, you know, everyone that's been
yeah.
In the corner. And I'm always, always, always looking to give opportunities to, you know, new designers and people that I feel have the right eye. And to me, the less interested you are in fashion, the better, because now we're going to really get to like,
fresh.
Exactly. Now we're going to get to like the dope stuff. You know, we don't want you to be inspired by the stuff that you see out there. It's very easy for that to happen, right? If we mm-hmm. come from a place of like, you know, we're going to show you all of that stuff, then you start to develop your own personal style. And then that personal style will end up as an artist, as a designer, because now the future, you know, Warhols and Basquiats, I guarantee are going to be graphic designers in the future.
Yeah.
I know it.
They have to
you
be.
You just know it, right?
Like, yeah. What are they going to do, write on a wall?
Right. It's not, you know, and the writings are on the wall.
Yeah.
You know, and that's just, you know, that's just what it is. So it's either we're going to be, you know, either we're going to adapt to it late or early. And I tend to be on the early side. I want to, you know, I want to support the things that are.
I got two more questions.
Sure.
First one is what was the lowest point ever for you professionally, like that you never want to forget, where you kind of where you came from? Corny question, but like, what was really the point where you're like, damn, honestly, I don't even know if I want to be in fashion.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I want to live in America. You know what I mean?
So many
times.
What
was that moment you never want to forget?
I mean, there's, unfortunately, and you know, I could sugarcoat it and say, I don't have moments. But honestly, I have moments like that weekly, monthly.
It's true.
You know?
I can relate.
You get these, you know, and the best thing to do is try to like block them out, because that's just your head saying, what if, right? Mm-hmm. But it's proven if you do the right thing on a daily basis, right? Something is going to happen. You're going to look back a year from now. You're going to be like, wow, look at all that progression. Yeah. So, you know, you don't really want to harp on the bad, but there's moments, you know, where, you know, I may not be, you know, in the right, living situation or circumstances where, you know, I need to put, you know, food on my plate, you know, like there's like times when like, you know, I'm struggling, because when you're self-funding your business, not only do you have to pay for your bills, but now to manufacture products, samples, garments, whatever it is, you have to put in your own money as well, which can get pretty expensive, you know,
and risky
because you don't know if it's going to come back or not. And, you know, when you do, especially when you do a production, you know, so that's one of the things right there that, you know, it still scares me till this day. But
yeah, because you might get an order for $100,000 worth of shit. You order it and it goes bad.
Right.
I mean,
right.
Hopefully never. And you can do stuff to avoid that. But right. that is on the table.
Very possible. Yeah. Very, very possible. And that's sort of kind of like how, you know, that's how
and God I forbid you ask someone to fund that.
Right. And now you're in the loop, you know, now you owe them, and it's, you know, it's a whole mess. So, you know, you really want to, take calculated risks. You don't want to do too much. You don't want to overextend yourself in terms of the product you're bringing in.
Right.
It may be a little bit more expensive to pay and bring in the garments that way, but still it's better to, you know, clear all the chips on the table while you have it versus, you know, bringing in more and then, you know, having too many chips on the table and not being able to clear them at all. You know, and that's the demise right there, because, you know, if you know, like
we talked about, focus is like the one skill I wish I had unlimited, you know, power to know exactly. It's not the work, like anyone can do physical labor, basically, you know, it's like what to work on. And like that dictates whether you're going to waste 5 years and miss the opportunity or make it. Right.
Right. Right. I mean, absolutely. And that's where it comes. That's where I feel like it comes into. And mentorships, guidance, finding someone out there that you remotely want to be like, or you remotely admire their hustle or appreciate how they've done things, and you want to sort of do things similar, but carve out your own lane and do things your own way. So, you know, I think that the best thing to do, actually, it's one of the most important things to do, is to have a mentor, right? Mm-hmm. Numerous mentors, right? I would pick
for different reasons.
Yeah, yeah. Like I would pick a dead mentor, right? So my dead mentor is Machiavelli.
Interesting. I've never heard this strategy.
Yeah, Niccolo Machiavelli. And then the other two, I prefer not to say because they're like still living or whatever, and I don't, you know, I'm inspired, but I'm not copying. So, that's the thing. So, I'm finding my own personal spin.
So speaking of that, what is your best advice for that? That might be it, but what other advice? What's your best advice for someone who, let's say they say I want to be Jonathan Andrews, of course, which they don't literally want to be you, but they're inspired by it.
Yeah.
What's your best advice for someone who's been inspired by your path, and what actually can someone do for you? Like, what can someone hit you up and how can people watching maybe or listening provide you value actually literally today?
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking to get into the field that I'm in, I didn't mention before, but I also start on the retail level. I wanted to see, feel, be around garments and speak about them, talk about them, and see if there was any emotion actually when I was speaking and talking about them. So there's like a very like big mystique with fashion and stuff like that. And some people could see the outside and see somebody like Kanye, right? See all the success, but not know that he went through so much struggle in this game that, you know, it's affected him permanently. You know, but that's going to be one of the greats. You know, he had to sacrifice himself for his people to get put on. You know what I mean? So yeah, like he really did. Like he was like, honestly, Jesus. Like he.
So you're saying don't get caught up in that stuff.
Yeah, don't get caught up in that stuff. You don't want to be caught up in
that part. Funny games.
No, you don't want to be caught up in that stuff. And I think that at this point right now, you know, we live and we breathe in like this do it yourself sort of energy. Era. Yeah. And it's an era of do it yourself. It's like, you don't need that manufacturer. You don't need that. Like,
that's right.
Find a way, you know what I mean? To make it happen. Like, and that could be, you know, and this is like a secret, is like, go to like that vintage store, find a piece that's similar, remotely similar to what you want to create. Get that piece altered, you know, get a feel for it before you go and you invest your money into something that may or may not bring returns, you know, and it's difficult to know what's going to bring a return, what's not going to bring a return. If I had a crystal ball, I wouldn't be here. Yeah. I'd be, you know,
all right,
sitting next to Yeezy or some shit.
There we go. So you can find Jonathan on Instagram. I'd say that's why the best place to find you, right?
Yeah.
And you can DM you didn't mention it. How can someone, is there anything today that you need, like that someone could actually give you?
Yeah.
It could be people, like inspiration, yeah, whatever. Is there anything?
Yeah, I mean, well, I'm gonna tell you what not to do, because everything else is okay. Everything else is completely fine. Yeah. Like, I'm okay with
you,
like,
can hit
exploring.
Him up. Just hit him up and say, yeah, what's up.
Just hit me up. Don't hit me up looking for like a handout or some sort of like, oh, put me on sort
it's
of
good
thing.
Advice.
It's just gonna turn me off. And don't do it with anyone, because like, what makes you think that they wouldn't put on like their brother, like their somebody that's like their like best friend or something, like whatever it may be, like that's, you know, that's who you're going to put into play. So you have to earn your way into it. There is no nepotism. There is no, oh, my daddy does this or my mommy does that.
Matter.
No, it doesn't matter here. I don't care what you do. I don't care if you come from a family with money. I don't care if you come from a family that was broke. Show me what you can bring to the table, and I'll make sure to find a way that we can make use of it, get you money, and get your career into the right direction, because direction is far more important than speed.
That's a really good quote.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe not the first person to say that, but that is really
true. No, definitely
true.
Not. I'm not the first to say really any of these quotes, by the way.
It's all about taste. It's about bringing it down. Everything has been done and said, but it's about bringing it down.
Exactly. You want to see what works for you and continue doing that.
There you go. So yeah. So like I said, Jonathan's definitely been. We met a few years back, but I'm definitely extremely interested in your future and where you go. And look, we look back on this 5 years from now. I think it's gonna be completely I can't wait. Actually, I can't wait.
Right.
Definitely. You know, reach out. He's a nice. He's gonna respond to your DMs if you reach out to him, email him, whatever. That's all. Jonathan Andrews, thanks so much for being on, bro.
Thank you. I appreciate it, Chris. Thank you for having me here.
All right.
Problem child, over and out.
That's it.
Classic.
Hey guys, Chris again. Thanks so much for watching that podcast or listening, whether it's on YouTube or Apple Podcasts or Spotify, which is my favorite way of listening to podcasts. Thanks so much for listening. If you liked it, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, leave a like. You can subscribe if you want to see my other videos here. I got some cool videos coming up and some cool videos that already are on the channel you should check out. Really appreciate it. And if you want to get in touch with me, just hit me up. I'll definitely respond. Like, hit me up on Instagram at ChrisHallNYC or Twitter at Chris Hall NYC. You can also email me chris@kickster.com, KICKSTER.com, chris@kickster.com. And if you want to learn more about me, go to chrishall.nyc. That's my website. And I got plenty of info on all the things that I do if you're interested in that. Once again, thanks so much. I really appreciate you listening all the way to the end. And I look forward to seeing you guys in the next episode or piece of content. See you guys later. Peace.